Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Dew Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
After the Sabbath, as the first day of the week was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. And suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven, came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning and his clothing white as snow. For fear of him, the guards shook and became like dead men. But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid. I know you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he has been raised, as he said. Come, see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has been raised from the dead. And indeed, he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him. This is my message for you." So they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came to him, took hold of his feet, and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me."
This is the call to all the dead and disappointed, the ones who feel like they are done. This is a word to all the ones who feel forgotten that you are not. Oh, you are not. 'Cause we're alive, 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 and we're singing. We're alive, 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 and we're shaking. We're alive, 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 alive in you.
I was listening to NPR about a week and a half ago, and Netta Ulaby, I've always wanted to say that name to a big group of people, Netta Ulaby was sitting down with two people, with Craig Borton and Melissa Wallach. That's them. That's Melissa on the left and Craig Borton in the middle. They're the original screenwriters, Craig Borton was, the original screenwriter for what became Dallas Buyers Club. How many of us have seen Dallas Buyers Club? A number of us have. This was 20 years ago. Some of you might have caught this story. 20 years ago that Craig Borton, who at the time was living out on the East Coast, he heard about this good old Texas cowboy. I'm from Texas, so I can say that. This good old Texas cowboy named Ron Woodruff. So everyone has an image of that good old Texas cowboy. Ron was the last person that you would imagine was going to have an impact on people who were suffering amidst the HIV/AIDS crisis. The last person you would imagine that was going to befriend a transgender person and then spend his life reaching in love to help people who were on the brink of death find new life. So Craig Borton heard about him and drove for 3 days just to spend time with him because the story felt so compelling to him. He did just that, and he left, and it turns out that this person, Ron Woodruff, was doing this all without the FDA approval, so it was all underground, that he was helping people who were struggling in a system that was allowing them to die, some would say forcing them to die. He was offering them medications that could help bring them back to life. That was 20 years ago. Borton imagined that he would write this, and then it was going to take off. And it looked like it was going to. Someone in Hollywood purchased the rights. And it was going to happen with Dennis Hopper and Woody Harrelson. It was ready to go. And then it fell on the ground. And then Brad Pitt was going to come on board. But again, everything fell through. They say it like this. It languished in what's called developmental hell for nearly a decade. Hollywood screenwriters, they usually learn to detach from things like this. This is their life. They let go of it. But Borton found himself losing his entire life. He could not let go of his hope for this movie. He said it came to him like a death blow when he found himself losing Dallas Buyers Club. And he fell into a vortex of alcohol and drugs. So much like the screenplay itself, his life was on the brink of death. He was hopeless. His co-writer, Wallach, says that for her, her strongest memory of that moment is when she had to literally peel him off of the floor and drag him to rehab. When he was reflecting on the moment, he says that the script went dormant during my dark days and then came to life during my light days. The script was dead, and Borton's life was on the brink. And miraculously, in 2009, Matthew McConaughey got involved, and through some epic deal-making, they say, the script rose from the dead, and it finally appeared on screen. They say that the tenacity of everyone involved is a tribute to someone who fought the healthcare system in his day to help other folks simply survive. It feels like a contemporary story of rising up, of deliverance, of resurrection, of new life. The script was dead, and it came to life. Borton himself was on the brink of death and found himself rising up when they least expected it, just like that good old country cowboy was least expected to rise up and help the people around him find new life. We've been living in the kind of uncertainty that all of these folks knew, whether it was back in a day in Texas or as they struggled to see if this screenplay would actually become real and alive. We've been calling our worship series, Give Up Certainty for Lent, Live in the Parables of Jesus. Lent is the season that helps followers of Jesus get in touch and get ready for the power and the mystery and the hope of resurrection and Easter. We've been living in these shades of gray throughout these last 40 days, trying to give up some of the things that we hold as certain so that we can live in the depth and the power of Jesus' teachings. And it turns out they were concrete stories, parables about life around him, about how God was inbreaking in things that people just thought were ordinary. And so we come in this morning and there are flowers and colors breaking through the art that is before us. And you'll see some of the parables that are around the sanctuary as well, or on your way out, I invite you to look at them. Some artists have taken colors and added those to the grays and the blacks and the whites that are there. Just moments of new life breaking forth through this place, through the art around us, through the parables that are here in our lives. We look together at a number of parables, one about a vineyard owner, about leaven and bread, about bridesmaids. All of these were examples of how Jesus was talking to folks about how God was coming into their very life, the messiness of their real lives. They were concrete. And so as we gather on Easter to celebrate God coming into the world as a holy human being named Jesus, God being born at Christmas, the Word being born, a wordless child, and then growing up, as many of the children will in this space, to teach us about life and love through parables and stories, to heal and to restore. The power that lived in Jesus caused so much fear in the powers that be around him that they had to put it to death. Then and today, we tend to do that as people. Jesus, though, moved right through Good Friday and into Easter. And it's in that moment that Jesus goes from telling parables to becoming a parable. Jesus' life and death and resurrection moves from the stories that he shares about how God is breaking into the world to the story for us to hold as a parable of God's love being born. That's how we move as well in this space, from shades of gray and color breaks forth, and it looks like this in Matthew's gospel. It begins, after the Sabbath, as the first day of the week was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. Each of the four Gospels shares a different story about resurrection. We can't put it in a box. There's no one way to look at it. It keeps coming to us like the parables do, with new meaning about how they shape our lives in this moment and at this time. But all of the stories have followers of Jesus rising early in the morning to go to be close to the body of the one that they had loved who had been put to death. But let's be clear, it was actually just the women who went to be close to the tomb. I imagine the men back then, maybe like myself and some of the men in the room now, maybe some women too. But at least for myself, I tend to want to go around grief. I don't want to get up early in the morning to meet it head on. I want to avoid it, sleep in, and then see if I can take a different route around it. But our Christian story calls us right through and into that suffering where God meets us. God meets us in those moments, not because God longs for those moments, but because God is not afraid to be with us in whatever hurt or death we experience. And some of us gathered in the beauty of this sanctuary on Friday night to hold the depth of that truth, that God meets us in those moments and holds us. The women were brave. They were courageous. They rise up before the sun, and they go to be close to the one that they had lost. Matthew's gospel continues. Suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descending from heaven came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning and his clothes white as snow. For fear of him, the guards shook and became like dead men. But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid." We might hear those words today, and we look back after so many centuries, but I imagine in those early Easter moments, that shook people to the core. The earthquake was out there, but it was in us as well. Think how dangerous it is for those women who had just put all of their hope in this person that they had loved, to actually hear that and to see it and to experience that Jesus is reaching out to them again in relationship and to try to trust again. It's dangerous to do that. You just lost what felt like everything. Are you really ready to trust again, especially that soon? They go through that grief. It's a dangerous place where we imagine that hope might rise again, just like those screenwriters had to do over and over. And then it kept slipping away. See, Matthew's gospel has the women going there and experiencing this and then running. I don't know what they were going to run and tell the disciples, but it says that they experienced great joy and fear. I imagine mixed up in them was all of this emotion and fear of trusting that hope might be rising in the midst of such grief. Can we really trust in that? And on the way, while they're running back, this is what often happens. God comes to us when we least expect it. They thought Jesus was going to be there at the tomb, and then they're running away from the tomb, and that's when the risen one actually shows up. Sometimes when you're running away from the place that you're trying to get to, the risen one meets you right there. And, you know, Jesus says exactly what you would imagine Jesus, the risen one, saying. Greetings. Really? Like, greetings. These women have moved through the grief of that moment, and the risen one meets them on the way running back with greetings. Like, you can't really, what? No, that's not the first word that you say. When you encounter someone, even just like, that's like how I meet someone when we're meeting for the first time. Greetings, my name is Matt. I don't even use that word anymore. Greetings. Well, so we started to look at that word a little bit this week, and what is it actually? So the Greek word for greetings, it turns out that it's a word called kairate. It has a very different meaning to me than greetings. Greetings sounds very formal, formulaic. But kairate is about joy and rejoicing, deep and abiding happiness. So Jesus greets them not with greetings, but with joy. I keep doing my voice, sorry. I'm trying to figure out why he would say greetings. And I think it's the Bible's way of saying Jesus shows up when they expected the relationship to be over and re-engages the relationship with joy and hope and happiness and rejoicing. Meets them right there and says, go from this relationship that's being restored, redeemed, renewed, go and tell folks about it. What in the world does that look like as Easter people? As folks on this side of Easter, go and tell. I think on some level it has to start with acknowledging how screwed up followers of Jesus have gotten the go and tell throughout the centuries. Lots of us have pulled out bullhorns. Some of us have pulled out weapons. And it's not just people long ago. When I look deeply at my own life, I have screwed this up as well. I have some kind of experience that feels earth-shattering to me. It feels like the earth is quaking, and I want to share that with someone, but I can't really greet them with joy and rejoicing as Jesus does. I tend in my emotions to run right over them, run right past them. So what does it look like for us to share and to tell that story that death does not have the last word, that hope is rising? What would it look like to be set free enough to go out into the world and share that kind of good news with folks? How would it look for you to share the colors that are breaking through in this space, the hope of Jesus as a parable with others? I want to try an example. Some of you know the song Happy by Pharrell Williams, yeah? Some of us know this song. It was actually originally created as an animated film, Despicable Me 2, right? There's a writer, and her name is Shan Wang. She's written brilliantly about how Happy has gone worldwide. It's risen up all over the place, especially as an anthem for citizens who live under troubled regimes. She writes about it like this. The movement started slowly. First, it was the soundtrack of a video of people dancing joyfully in Paris. But then, the video started to crop up all over, in the Philippines, and then in Tunisia, and then in Moscow, all of these places. And it's not a traditional protest song. It's not a protest song of the 60s that rises up against power. But it seems like in subversive ways, not ways that we can box in, but ways that break free, it might be a really phenomenal example of life emerging in places that long for freedom amidst hurt and brokenness. Shan writes, its crowning moment as an international protest anthem came late last month when two Polish filmmakers used it as a soundtrack to a viral video of violent clashes between Ukrainian citizens and government forces, and they intercut that with protesters in Kiev dancing. It's a haunting image to see protesters dancing alongside all of these barricades. And frankly, it lifts up happiness in profound ways. One woman says it this way, to be happy, I need the Ukraine to be free. So let's watch just a little piece about the way this song is.
Zero airplay, nothing. And the next thing you know, we put out the video on November 21st. All of a sudden, boom.
Boom.
I mean, when I say boom.
You mean
boom.
Yeah.
And we were like, what's happening? Okay, first of all, people are putting up their own videos.
Yeah.
It was like no longer my song.
Yeah. Can we roll the tape of that? When people started putting videos around the world of themselves getting happy.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
Slovakia, Portugal.
I don't care.
amazing. Makes me cry too. You know, I was just thinking about your grandmother. I bet she didn't even imagine that. No. Bet she didn't even imagine that. I know. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
Why am I crying on Oprah?
You know, it's being used for something that's greater than yourself. I get that.
It's overwhelming because it's like, I love what I do, and I just appreciate the fact that, like, people have believed in me for so long that I could make it to this point to feel that. Yeah. Sorry.
I get it. I really get it. I so now get why it's so infectious, because it came from such a clear space that right. The energy was absolutely uninterrupted by anything other than allowing it to flow from heart to heart. Yes. And that's what happens when you see it. Yeah.
Yes.
The risen one meets those women on the way with joy and with deep happiness. It says, don't be afraid. And when you hear that song, you can't, even for somebody like me, you can't help but move. And that's saying something. Brenda knows me. That's saying something. That's saying a lot. But that's what happens in that song. That's what happens in resurrection. You can't really describe to somebody in a neat way what happiness is. You can't really describe to somebody in a perfect way what resurrection is. But when you feel it, when you encounter it, when you experience it and you start to move in ways that you didn't know that you could move, it encounters you. And then you know it. Sometimes only for a fleeting moment, like those women. But this isn't a story that happened just back then. This is a story like that song that keeps popping up all over the place, often where we least expect it, in places that feel like they're overwhelmed with hurt and grief, just like the lives of those women. Hope rises. They're set free. And it's not a coincidence that Jesus, the risen one, says to them, don't be afraid. What feelings were they holding? Fear and joy. If we let go of the fear, we live in that place of deep joy, of happiness, that song that keeps moving us. God's resurrection breaks us of those chains of sin and shame, and we're covered in grace. We can't always find words for it, but resurrection is happening in and through and around us all the time. If only we have the eyes to see how hope is rising. See, God's hand at Easter reaches out to save those women, me, you, all of creation, to set us free. And so this Easter morning, we're grateful for God's grace and for God's love, for the ways that we are set free from fear to deep joy and happiness. Amen.
You broke my chains of sin and shame, and you covered me with grace.
You mend my life with your holy fire. You covered me with grace. And you are the hand that reaches out to save. I am set free, oh, oh, oh.
Me down, can nothing.
I
happy.
Bring me down, my level's too high.
Happy.
Bring me down, can't nothing.
Happy.
Bring me down, I said.
Happy.
Bring
happy.
Me down,
happy.
Can't
happy.
Nothing.
Happy.
Bring
happy.
Me down,
happy.
My
happy.
Level's too
happy.
High.
Happy.
Bring
happy.
Me down,
happy.
Can't
happy.
Nothing.
Happy.
Bring
happy.
Me down,
because I'm happy.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth.
Because I'm happy.
Clap along if you know what happiness is to you.
Because I'm happy.
Clap along.